I learnt something new today, Glyn.
Did you? What was that then?
Well, I mean, your life will be transformed once I tell you this. And I, for one, will certainly die happy, full in the knowledge of what I'm about to tell you.
Go on.
We went to Fifield Down and we were doing the recording.
Yes.
And right towards the end, we were standing in front of Delling Copse and something started making a mysterious noise and the barking.
Yeah, that you said was a fox.
Yes. Well, it may not have been a fox, which I found out today. Apparently, muntjac deer make a similar noise. So who knew, eh? Who knew that?
Well, the funny thing is, I think I did, because I've heard that similar noise to that in Green Lane Wood, which is my local wood. Or you certainly used to, but they've done a lot of sort of building up to the edge of that wood, and the deer seem to have just moved out,
scarpered,
and gone to the next remote place.
Oh, well, there are. I thought I could enrich your life today, and I failed.
Okay, welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. I've lost count now. 14, I think.
14, it is.
14? How did we get to that many?
Oh, I know.
Anyway, the good news is we aren't running out of things to talk about. But we are going to take things in a little bit of a different direction this week. All will become clear as we go forward. But as usual in the start of these podcasts, we kind of do a little bit of a summary as to what we've been up to over the last couple of weeks. And so... Paul, what have you been up to?
Well, normally you tell people who we are.
I do, but I think they already know, don't they?
Well, not if they're new listeners.
Okay.
Who are you, Glyn? Go on,
so who am I? Who am I? Well, my name is Glyn Coy, and I'm the face behind the Hidden Wiltshire Project.
There are
many, many strings to my bow.
There's a new one.
Yeah, exactly. So go on, Paul. You can introduce yourself now and come up
with your witty
introduction.
So my name is Paul Timlett, and God knows what I am or who I am. I've lost track these days. I have no idea. I've ceased to care.
Yeah.
I'm becoming something of a naturalist. Not a naturist, but a naturalist.
I've noticed that. You're like Mr. Flowers at the moment.
Flower boy, yeah.
And actually, when you talk about them or, you know, write about them, I've noticed you speak with such authority now. So that little app on your phone's really helping you educate yourself.
Well, that's the trick, isn't it? Teachers always say that as long as you know 10% more than the kids, or if you're a trainer, 10% more than anybody else, then who will know if you're talking complete hogwash, which I normally am. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, back to your question. What have you been doing? And the answer is orchids, mostly. I've spent mostly 2 weeks on my hands and knees searching for orchids. And it's just... we talk about poppies a lot, don't we, on this podcast. But this year, the orchids have been incredible. And
they
poppies
have.
Noticeable by their absence. In fact, somebody... contacted me the other day and said via the sort of Hidden Wiltshire Facebook messenger and said, did I know where there were any poppy fields this year? And I had to admit that I didn't. I've seen hardly any. Anyway, she managed to find some for herself, which is fantastic. But the orchids have been absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, I've got an orchid story. So last night, because we went out last night to record some audio, after I left you, I went up to... Dunscombe Bottom because we've got some livestock back up there, so I was going up to do some cow counting, but actually the cows have gone on much later this year, so it's allowed the grass to really grow and the flowers to really establish. And I tell you what, I've never seen so many orchids up there. There were hundreds and hundreds of them. I've never seen anything like it, and I've been going up there for about 5 years, but it's something about this year has really helped these orchids come into flower. I mean, I've never seen so many.
It can only be the weather.
Yeah.
Because the places I've been going, nothing's changed in the way of animal grazing or anything else. It's purely the weather.
Yeah.
So it must be that sort of really hot, dry, early spring, and then a lot of wet weather. I spent the last couple of days just sort of, well, a couple of hours each day sort of roaming around Milk Hill. Mainly, I was looking for early gentian, which are super rare. I mean, they're very, very difficult to spot, but very few of them around. And even though I had a 10-digit grid reference, which will take you down to, I don't know, a square metre, I never found them. So I spent probably a total of about 4 hours grovelling around in the grass. But all around me, I mean, it was almost, you get blasé about the orchids that were just absolutely, I mean, thousands upon thousands. And they, because it's all chalk grasslands, they're probably you tend to see the same handful of species. Well, certainly I did. So you get sort of common spotted, fragrant, pyramidal, I can never say that word, bee orchids. Those are the main ones that I've been seeing. And I've seen posts on Instagram, people finding others like frog orchids and a whole host of others.
Yeah.
But you do see the same ones in the same place sort of year after year. It's not often you see a sort of an interloper.
Yeah, I mean, at Dunscombe last night, it was mostly common. Well, all I could see was common spotted orchids.
Yeah.
Lots of them. I mean, I'm going to go back on Friday to kind of spend a bit more time there and see what else is there. But, I mean, I know in the past you used to spot the odd one as you walk through the grass, but they're just everywhere now. So I've been doing a couple of interesting things. I've been scouting out a couple of new walks to put on the website. One was the Coffin Trail from West Ashton to Steeple Ashton, which is a fabulous walk, actually.
It looks lovely. I mean, your photographs are superb.
Yeah, it's just because you're walking through those fields. It's not too hilly, it's quite flat, but to your left, you actually get a really sort of, because you're higher up than the town of Trowbridge, you're kind of looking down on it. But it looks like Trowbridge that doesn't look like Trowbridge. It's quite a rural scene. So it's just an interesting angle on it. And then on the other side, you look across and you're looking straight across to the escarpment of Salisbury Plain. You see Pickett Hill and Bratton Camp, and it's very dramatic. And then you've got the lovely wheat fields, and it's just perfect. So I'm going to write up a blog about that. And the other thing I did is I went exploring around the Gallops at Beckhampton and did a sort of circular walk up towards Cheryl Down and back down the Roman Road. And again, brilliant views of, the hills as they go across to Pusey with you can see the Wansdyke snaking up the hill. At one point, you got a straight on view of the Roman Road pointing straight down to Silbury Hill. Very nice. Very nice indeed.
Yeah, I had a sort of sneak preview of your photo, what we all have on Facebook, and it's just looks stunning. So looking forward to that blog.
And not too many people there either.
No.
Which is always a bonus.
But it's such a big landscape that it's very easy to lose yourself in there and not see anybody.
Yeah.
The glory of Wiltshire. I think the other thing I've been up to, as you know, is another shameless plug. The Marlborough Open Studios that Steve Dixon, who does the music for the podcast, and I and a guy called Alan Cowley, we're exhibiting our photographs together at Marlborough Open Studios, which opens this weekend. So it's all a bit manic at the moment, sort of last minute preparations for the opening. And we're trying to do something a little bit different this time, which is proving a bit of a challenge. But by the time this comes out on Sunday, it'll be day two of Marlborough Open Studios. For those that don't know, Marlborough Open Studios is an art trail. And there's something like, I think I read something like 70 artists of all sorts exhibiting. And they exhibit in their own studios dotted around the sort of Marlborough area. So it's quite good fun to actually plot a route from one studio to the next. So you can go on the website or pick up one of the brochures, which seem to be everywhere, and sort of plan your tour of the studios. It's a nice way to spend a day or a weekend. Right, anything else to report?
I don't think so. So we can go straight into the meat and bones of this week's podcast, which is about Wiltshire Clumps.
So we put a blog up on the website, and there were links to it, the Facebook site, and we did a bit of a joint venture. So this is good fun to do. So Glyn and I we roped in the legendary Steve Dewey, who takes some really fine photographs, and we sort of co-wrote a blog about Wiltshire Clumps, and so if you go on the website, you'll see all the photographs, which are a mixture of Glyn's, Steve's, and my photographs, and we all sort of contributed to the words there.
So, clumps is an interesting
yes
word, because I mean, and I guess there's two things. One is, so people are aware, I mean, we're talking about tree clumps here, clumps of trees in the landscape, or copse.
Copse, yeah.
But it's, I guess the question that may be on people's minds is, why would we do this? What's so special about clumps in Wiltshire? I mean, what's your view on that, Paul?
Well, they're not unique to Wiltshire. As you know, I grew up in Sussex, and you know, from what I can remember, we called them clumps as well. And a sort of favourite of mine over there was Chanctonbury Ring, which is quite famous, which I believe is also sort of beech trees, but here they're really sort of ubiquitous in the Wiltshire landscape, and they are generally beech plantations, small plantations of beech trees, but not uniquely so. I mean, one of them we're going to come on to talk about is I'm not sure they're beech or not, but we can talk about that. But the it's interesting to sort of look at the reasons why they're there. So these are generally small stands of trees standing on the mostly on the top of a hill, but certainly in a very prominent position so that it can be seen right across the landscape, and a little bit like barrows, burial mounds, which are there to be seen. And a lot of the clumps were planted in the mid, sort of around the mid 19th century, and they were purely for decorative reasons. They were sort of ornamental plantations, so planted by the landowner, and you know, there to be seen. Now, why they all sort of sprung up around that period, I'm not sure, and somebody can probably tell us that they weren't all planted then, and there have been plantations since. In fact, I think Chanctonbury Ring, which I refer to, was planted, although it's Sussex, but I think that was planted in the early 20th century. I think it was planted by a guy whose son was killed in the trenches in the First World War, and he planted the trees up there as a sort of memorial to his son. So I'm sure there are some like that in Wiltshire as well.
Yeah, maybe it's just one of these things. It could be an idea that just caught on and became fashionable, and something for people to do with their land. But it's the thing that I find interesting about them, and other people have confirmed this since the blog post went up, is that they become like an anchor in the landscape for people. You may not even know what the clump's called or where it is, but you see it when you're travelling through, and it becomes a familiar feature. Maybe when you're travelling home, when you see that clump, you know you're almost there. It's one of those things that just capture the people's imagination in a really interesting way.
And it's almost like sort of a navigational point as well, because you can see these things from such a long way away.
Yeah, I know over my side of Wiltshire, I use Furze Knoll as one of my sort of anchors, because you can see that from so many different places.
Yeah. And that's a neat segue into a little recording we made last night over at Furze Knoll.
Yes, we did. We went into the very creepy and slightly surreal Furze Knoll and went inside and had a look around. All right, so here we are at Furze Knoll. Creepy looking place.
Yeah, and even though it's, I mean, it's the evening, but it's not that late, and absolutely nobody around. And we're standing in a field just to the side of it, trying to work out which side, west, sort of to the west, yeah. Northwest, and it's we can hear a couple of birds singing out here, but in the wood, nothing.
It just looks so dense and dark in there, actually. Yeah. And the thing that strikes me about it is, if you look from here, you can see it's almost symmetrical.
Yeah.
It's very curved.
The tree, it's like the tree, the canopy.
The canopy is almost manicured, but it's not. It's purely natural. And I guess the other thing that struck me when I was sort of looking into it and trying to research it last year, I thought there must be something written by someone about this place. And I couldn't find anything.
No, I couldn't.
I think there's been very little archaeological research done in it. But I just thought it's so prominent in the landscape that there must be some story behind it. But then I realised it's probably not, as a copse, that old, because it's got beech trees.
It's just getting into the copse now.
Yeah, it's quite dark, isn't it, already?
It's very dark. And of course, the shapes of the trees up here are quite eerie.
Yeah.
They look like, what's that? Is it Lord of the Rings, or where the trees are alive?
The Ents from Lord of the Rings. Yeah. We do know that some people have been using this place for some kind of pagan rituals.
Yeah.
Because people have found animal heads strung up on the trees, which is
and buried
creepy.
In holes in the ground as well. Badger's head in particular was buried in a hole in the ground.
And the other thing I find interesting here is you can see there's big undulations here, and it's quite hilly.
Yeah.
But from the road, it doesn't look like this. It just looks quite uniform.
Yeah, it just looks like a rounded hilltop with a bunch of trees plumped on top.
But those tree roots are amazing, aren't they?
Yeah. This is a bit like, it reminds me of Folly Wood.
Yeah,
tree there, the Headless Horseman track. It's a sort of classic beech tree roots.
Yeah.
So the sun's sort of going down to our right, and we're looking down into this sort of great sort of bowl, I suppose you'd describe it. And even though the trees are quite thick and it's quite dark in here, there's a great sort of shaft of light. Sort of lighting up one side of this bowl. It's quite striking.
It's strange, isn't it? Because this, you can see the prominence that the trees are planted on is higher than the surrounding land. It's like a mound in itself, which is very strange, isn't it?
Yeah, well, but I believe it is natural. I don't think this is man-made.
Well, I can hear one bird.
Yes.
Not that many in here, though, are there?
And there never are. You come up in the daytime, it's very, very...
They must know something.
Yeah. There's sort of a vibe about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a blackbird. That's pretty much all we can hear. But as we said in the blog, I mean, this is, again, it's part of a really ancient landscape.
Yes.
So we're looking now across, sort of through the trees in the direction of Avebury. And the landscape there is just everywhere you look. There's mounds, you know, long barrows, round barrows.
I believe there's a bowl barrow a couple of 100 yards over that direction.
That's right, yeah.
That was on the Historic England website. But yeah, that's very ancient. Of course, we've got the Wansdyke.
Yep.
Over in that direction over there.
Yeah, between us and Churhill.
Yeah.
Or Cheryl, sorry.
You see the monument there.
You can see the monument through the trees there, yeah. And the Wansdyke is between us and Cheryl. It's only about 100 metres across the field.
Yeah, about 100 metres away from here, so. Yeah. Wow.
and then you can see it. I think if we went to the edge of the copse, you'd be able to see it snaking all the way across to Milk Hill. Yeah, you can just about make it out.
Yeah.
Milk Hill and Knapp Hill.
Yeah, you can see the Danes over there.
In fact, there's a, you can see the heights, the hills, which it must be Milk Hill or Tan Hill. But it's noticeably higher than up here, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel that high when you're up there. But this place does give me the creeps.
I'm not surprised.
In the evening anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure I'd want to spend a night up here.
So that was Furze Knoll. Clearly, as we're recording this the next day, we escape with our lives. I think, as we said when we were there, it's not a place I particularly want to be at night. And even though it wasn't that late, or it wasn't late at all when we were recording last night, it felt much later, didn't it? It was so dark in that
yeah,
copse.
the trees are quite densely packed, so the sort of the canopy is, it makes it quite dark during daylight as well, so it does have that. But there is something mysterious about it, and we know that, you know, there's been some fairly strange things seen and found in there.
So. Yes, yeah. But as you say, I mean, and as we said in the blog, I mean, you can see Furze Knoll for God miles away, and so it's a great navigational point. But the I'm going to sort of jump around now because not. I'm not going to go through every clump in the blog because we'll be all night, but one of the ones that always catches my eye from a long distance is down my neck of the woods is the one on Cope Hill Down. And in fact, after I sort of left you yesterday and you went off to count cows or whatever you do to cows over at Dunscombe Bottom,
Count them. Okay. Actually, no, I do a bit more than that. I do sort of check on the well-being.
Too much information. but as you sort of drive between Tilshead and Shrewton, where I live, you only get a brief glimpse of it. But as you there's a big black barn by the side of the road, right by the side of the A360, and if somebody else is driving, you can glance to your right and you can see this clump. On Cope Hill Down, and it really does. It's very, very isolated. It sits a long, long way from anything else, and it's just, it's not actually on the brow of a hill. In fact, it's slightly below the brow of the hill, and it's like a sort of a slope. But those trees really do stand out. You can see them once you get up higher. You can see them from a long, long way away.
Are you able to walk up to those?
Yeah,
on the plane?
Yeah, yeah. So you can't drive. So. There's all sorts of weird and wonderful bylaws relating to Salisbury Plain, but there are open access areas free to roam. So the bit of the plain around Shrewton up to Deptford Down, so between here and Chitton, really, that's open access. So on foot, you're free to roam. And then there's all the regulations relating to if you're on a horse or riding a bike or in a motorised vehicle. So the clump on Cope Hill Down, you can walk up to it. I've run sort of photography or a photography workshop up there. You can walk up to it, but you can't drive up to it, or you shouldn't. That's in breach of bylaws. And as I subsequently found, you can't even ride your bike up there. So yeah, you can park on one of the tracks, on one of the tracks. And again, you've got to be careful which tracks you drive on. I mean, it's the same anywhere, but you can't drive on a bridleway or a restricted byway, but on a byway open to all traffic, or boats as they call them. You can drive along those, park on the edge, and you just walk across, and it's, I don't know, 500 metres or something. But you can't miss it.
Yeah.
Absolutely can't miss it. And as you saw from the photographs I posted, I mean, God, it's wild up there. It really is. In bad weather, it's a place where you could be in Siberia, you know.
Yeah.
I took some photographs up there a few years ago. I think we had, when we had the really heavy snows, was it 2018, 2019?
Yeah.
And I was taking one of the photographs that I posted, and within minutes I couldn't feel my hands because it was an absolute blizzard, and you could just about make out the trees through the blizzard. And I had the camera up on a tripod, and you have to take your gloves off to work the controls of the camera, and within minutes my hands were almost blue, and I was, despite wearing about five layers of clothing, I was absolutely bitterly cold. Yeah. And I had to sort of hightail it back to the car, which was on the nearby track, and get warm.
Yeah.
Because there's just absolutely nothing to stop the wind whistling across there. But it's one of those clumps where I've got absolutely no idea where it is. And an interesting sort of discussion we had with David Carson, when we were, because he guided the last Wiltshire Museum walk up on Milk Hill. And I think people always think that sort of Wiltshire was this great sort of forest, you know, the chalk down them would have been forests, yeah. And then it was cut down when the hunter-gatherers started to settle. But I think, you know, received wisdom there is that that's actually not the case, and that it's always been sort of sparse in terms of trees. It was the tree cover was quite sparse.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the same with Cope Hill Down. I mean, there are some quite big woods up there, but and whether Cope Hill Down, the clump there, was part of a bigger wood, and they've cut down all around it, I've no idea. But there's absolutely sort of there's no shelter. It always, because Salisbury Plain is sort of flat and open, or large, broadly flat and open. You just get the most incredible view of the skies. I've been up there and photographed at sunset, at sunrise, and it's, you know, you can see the sun sort of coming up over the horizon miles and miles and miles away over towards Stonehenge and beyond.
Yeah, it's one of the few places in Wiltshire where you can really get to a point where you feel very, very remote, very wild.
Yeah.
And yes, you know, sometimes it's off limits because the army are up to their tricks, but
well, it's actually it's not, because there's no live firing up there.
Yeah, but I was going to say there are parts of it where you, because you don't get that.
Yeah.
But it's still part of the MOD, so it's not going to be built on or everything. You just find these wild landscapes and places.
The one thing you do have to be careful of, and Cope Hill Down, is it's not far from what's called Fox Covert, which is a dropping zone. So quite occasionally you'll see a Hercules or an A400 sort of coming in from whichever direction, depending on which way the wind blows, and they do a drop. So they have the back door open and they chuck a load of cargo out the back on these huge parachutes, and they sort of drift down. And that's probably no more than half a mile from the copse of trees. And I've often wondered whether they use the copse as a navigational point, particularly when they sort of come in from the west. You can see that copse from a long, long way off.
And of course, you've got the artificial village up there, haven't you?
The training village, which is pretty close by as well.
Yeah.
Where I think they do live firing. I mean, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong there, but I believe there's live firing on there. But the range is all around where I'm referring to, and sort of outside shooting, there's no live firing. I mean, you'll see cartridge cases up there, but they're all blanks.
Yeah.
In fact, I found a belt. You imagine the sort of thing they feed into a machine gun.
Yeah.
I actually found a belt full of cartridges just outside Shrewton the other day. And
as you do,
they hadn't. Yeah, as you do, yeah. And it was right. It was right on a restricted byway as well. So I sort of phoned range ops and said, maybe you ought to come and remove these. You know, this sort of delightful. It was an army guy came up and sort of removed them. And just as he got there, a friend of mine who I hadn't seen for about a year, just by sheer coincidence, happened to appear on his mountain bike. And he lives in Westbury. He was miles from home, and he was about to ride over these cartridges. So I sort of stand there and block the way. And he said, "Bloody hell! You know what? Where did that lot come from?" But they failed to fire, because you could see the end cap hadn't. There was no sign of sort of percussion there. And then the ends of the shells are all sort of crimped because they're they put wax in the end, and that's why they're blanks. So you find that sort of stuff up there quite a lot. But what else should we talk about? What's your favourite clump? I think I know the answer, but go on.
Well, I've got a few, but I think, you know, one of the my favourite enduring ones is Tinhead.
Yeah. I knew you'd say that.
Yeah, and I think it's because it's close to home. I can see it when because I'm in sort of on the outskirts of Trowbridge on the Hilberton side, and I'm in a dip. So when I look out my sort of front door, I'm quite close to Patscroft Brook. So I'm, you know, right at the low end of the land. But when I walk up the road and then up the hill towards Hilberton and look back, I can see the escarpment and I can see Tinhead. So it becomes like one of my anchors in the landscape as well. So, you know, I've got Fursnon on one side and then Tinhead's another one on this side. So you can see Tinhead all the way over to sort of Seend and Devizes Way. You know, you can see it all the way from Bradford-on-Avon, actually, because I was up there a few weeks ago at on the top of the hill where there's a row of houses called the Tory. There's a nice little chapel there with a bench where you can sort of sit, and you get an unobstructed view all the way across to the escarpment. You see the Westbury White Horse, and there you see Tinhead.
Wow.
This tree clump on top of a long barrow, and it's I've heard some people refer to it as a sort of hedgehog shape.
Yeah.
Because it does. It's got this, like, it looks like it bristles of a hedgehog over the top of the long barrow, which gives it this nice shape. But yeah, I love it. I go up there in all weathers, and I've seen it in all seasons. And whether it's surrounded by, you know, rapeseed or wheat in the summer, and whether it's just bare and bleak and brown, and, you know, by a ploughed field in the winter, and, you know, covered in snow and frost as well. It's just a place I always go back to and just look at. And it's a strange one because you can't walk up to this one because it's in the middle of a field.
No, that's right. It's cultivated all around it, isn't it?
Yeah, they're cultivated all up to the edge and it's fenced off. I did sort of put my drone up and kind of cropped a shot in just to get a look at it from different angles. But it looks magnificent. It's one of my favourites.
Yeah, and it's got me thinking about the number of clumps that do have burial mounds at their heart. I think one of the others that I mentioned in the blog was New King Barrows on the actually very close to Stonehenge, which is I mean, I think there's only four beech trees there, and whether it's, I suppose it's a clump, it doesn't really sit on top of it's not in a prominent position, but again, because there's no trees immediately around it, it does stand very sort of, you know, it's very prominent in the landscape. And sort of right in the middle, there is a burial mound. And everybody tends to head for the New King Barrows, which is right by the A303. Where I think there's a lot more trees there and a lot more barrows, but that's newer, as the name suggests, newer than Old King Barrows.
Yeah, so this is Old King Barrows, which is slightly less well known. And actually, the way you look at it, it's the photographs you put up are interesting because it really does look like the trees are kind of guarding the barrow.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But somebody, I forgot to reply, but somebody asked on the Facebook page when we posted the pictures whether that's, because I think the New King Barrows is also, I don't know if it's a separate stand of trees or one part of New King Barrows is called Nile, I think it's called Nile Clump, because the position of the trees was laid out something to do with Napoleon's ships during a great sort of sea battle between the English and the French. So I think it's called Nile Clump. I might be wrong there. But yeah, there's always quite a lot of people there because they come up, they can see it from Stonehenge and they walk up from the stones across the fields there next to the A303. Whereas Old King Barrows, you've got to walk that bit further and a lot of people just don't bother.
Yeah.
But there's another clump that I didn't include in the blog, which just occurred to me the other day, which you also know of because I know you've walked past it. It's Corton, the clump just on the hill above Corton in the Wylie Valley.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a clump of trees there, and again there's a barrow, there's a burial mound, in amongst the beech trees. Similar to Tin Head, you can't walk up to it. It's in the middle of a cultivated field.
It's interesting, though, because there's quite a lot of examples of trees growing on barrows across the whole of the Wiltshire landscape.
Yeah.
And I know that West Kennet, before it was basically refurbished and open to the public in the last century, that had trees growing across the top of it. I've seen photographs. And, of course, East Kennet Long Barrow is covered in trees. But, again, not many people find that because it's on private land and it's not been excavated. It's just a picturesque, Long Barrow covered in a tree clump.
Yeah.
You can photograph it from, because I've done that from West Kennet Long Barrow. I've stood on the top and got my zoom lens out and zoomed in on East Kennet. And it's a really nice looking clump, actually. I didn't think about that. And I forgot about that one.
Well, I think the blog was never meant to be exhaustive, was it? It was just...
We were going to choose our favourite ones, and we knew we weren't going to cover them all, because I know when I put the post on Twitter, there were some people, from over by Aldbourne that way in Swindon, talking about there was one over there that they were fond of. And, there's so many. There's so many.
Yeah. But... just thinking about the others, there's another favourite of mine is Summerslade, which we one on Summerslade Down.
Yes,
which we do talk about quite often, or we have done recently. We could see it the other week when we did the Titherington and Sutton Veney walk. And
yeah, you can see it. You can see it from the A350 as well. When I drive down to Bournemouth to see my son, I glance at it as I go, and always point it out, because of course I know it's seeing it from the A350, you know that that's the clump is like a gateway into that wonderful part of the landscape up by the Deverells. It's just so picturesque.
And of course, as we said in the blog, if you're down at Brixton Deverell, you just look up these trees on a... Again, they're not quite on the summit, are they? They're just sort of on the slopes of the hill.
Yeah.
So you can only really see them from the east. If you go to the west, and even quite close. I mean, the first time I discovered them, and I was chatting to a farm worker up there who was sort of pointing them out, and I thought it was a bush. What I could see was the top of this beech tree sort of poking out above the slopes of the hill. By that sort of artificial stone circle, or the modern stone circle up on Summerslade Down. And it's not far from there. And all I could see was the top of this tree. And he said, no, that's where the right of way goes. If you go across there, and then it's sort of as you slowly come over the brow of the hill, and then the sort of you start to see the clump, but you don't get as good a view of it as you do from around Brixton Deverell, or indeed where we were above Sutton Veney. But what I like about that one is just the story there of the sort of faithful farm worker who worked on the farm at Summerslade Down for years, and when he eventually passed away, he wanted his ashes spread up there, and just a fantastic place to spend eternity. So
yeah,
I have to say
the interesting thing about that clump is that up on the top there, it's quite exposed, and I know when I was up there and did my walk last year, it was on a very hot sunny day.
Yeah.
So it was like a bit of welcome shade.
Yeah.
And of course, when I got there to stand in the shade, I was surrounded by about 200 sheep who were also using it as shade. And you got this fantastic black and white photo that you took of the sheep under the trees. And it's one of these shots that's perfect. It could be taken anywhere. You could have taken it in Crete or somewhere,
Yeah, exactly. I've never been to that part of the world, but when I looked at it, I thought, God, this could be Greece or one of the islands.
Yeah, just seeing the livestock taking some shelter from the hot sun. Very nice place.
But again, it was like when you went, it was a baking hot day, even though it was springtime. Spring last year, which we all sort of look back and think, we were locked down, we couldn't go anywhere. But I spent a couple of months sitting in the garden getting burnt.
Yeah.
Another clump, which again we've seen quite a lot of recently, is Woodbury Hill.
Yes. So, yeah, we've been over that way quite a lot recently, yeah, actually, haven't we?
And certainly the last 2 days searching for the elusive early gentian on Milk Hill, it was sort of always there. You know, its presence just sort of... I'm trying to think how far away from it. It's probably only about a mile or so, a couple of miles at most. But you know, you're always aware of the clump just sort of looking at you from afar.
Yeah, I see it as well. When I'm driving towards Avebury, when I go through Devizes and on that road that takes you to Beckhampton roundabout, as you glance to your right to the Pusey Downs, you can clearly see Woodborough.
Yeah, you can see it from there.
It stands out. Yeah. And actually, it doesn't look too far away.
And as I was driving up yesterday, I drove through the village of Woodborough. And as you sort of come through, there's a 20-mile-an-hour limit. Speed limit around where the school is. Once you get past the school, in fact, the last 2 days I've somehow managed to go past just as the school was turning out. So you really got to keep your wits about you. Lots of little kids running around, which is, thank God, there's a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit. Yeah. But as you sort of get through the other side, heading north, and you're still in a 20-mile-an-hour limit, even though you're well past the school, it is an opportunity to sort of look just sort of half right, and you can see Woodbury Hill there. So you get a completely different perspective of it. And you're certainly, my eye leads more towards the hill than the trees and the shape of the hill there. And whereas from the other side, the hill is, it's not lost, but I don't know about you, but if I'm on Milk Hill or Knapp Hill, my eye is always drawn to the clump on the top.
Yeah,
but if you as I said in the blog, if you sort of position yourself right, if you're on Milk Hill or around that side to the north of Woodborough, the trees do sort of sit above the horizon, so it's great for photographs.
Yeah, it's also next to a curious hill called Picked Hill.
That's right.
Which, when you see it from below, looks a bit like Silbury Hill. Really, it's kind of very steep and almost like it's been dumped in the landscape, but it's one of those places. It's there, I know, but I've never walked up there because I don't think there's any public footpaths or rights of way.
No,
up
there isn't. That's my sort of mini rant in the blog, was about the sort of access to Woodbury Hill. I mean, there literally is, there's one path, and the last time I went up there, it was just an absolute quagmire. It was unbelievable. And it comes up from the canal to the south, and you have to walk up this path, and you get to the trees at the top, and you can have a bit of a wander around the trees, and there's a bit of meadow to the north of the trees, but all everywhere there's private signs. And, they run a chute up there, and, so you have to, you know, up and down the same way. But yeah, I the last time I was up there, in fact, there was a chute going on, and I was chatting to, I assume it was the gamekeeper, lovely bloke actually, and, you know, just sort of advising me where they would be shooting and, you know, where the best places to walk were. And I said to him, can you get to Picked Hill? And he said, no, unfortunately there's no right of way across there.
Yeah.
Because there's a trick point on Picked Hill? Or is it a
yes, there is, yeah. Yeah, there is.
So that, yeah, that tends to sort of stand out a bit.
Yeah.
Another clump, and this is the one I sort of alluded to earlier on, and which we were looking at last night when we were recording at Furze Knoll, is Oliver's Castle, which I'm not sure whether that counts as a clump, but we don't care. We're putting it in anyway.
It's kind of clumpy. There are a few individual trees that are scattered around as well that stand out. So it looks like a spread of almost like feathery trees from a distance, which because, again, you'd assume, you know, in the past, if these places were forested, there'd be more up there. But I think the fact that the hill is quite exposed, there's probably a lot of wind that comes up through the local area, and I would imagine it's very hard for trees to thrive up there. And actually, I've got a photo. I put it on Twitter a few months ago. I've got a photo that I took of the trees from one angle that was next to an exact same screenshot, the same view from the film 1984 with I think it was Richard Burton in it.
Yeah.
John Hurt and Richard Burton are stood in the shot looking around Ray Hill, and the trees haven't grown. They're exactly the same height in both shots, even though it's, you know, 84. I don't know how many years. I can't do math so quickly. 30 odd years or something since the pictures were taken.
Well, that's interesting, because I'm just trying to think back now, because every time I seem to go up there, it seems to be winter, so there's no leaves. I mean, the trees are still alive, I assume.
They are, yeah, they are still alive.
But I've just occurred to me that what we should have done was look back at old maps to see if the that clump was more extensive, whether there were more trees 100 years ago, and whether some of them have died back. Because as we were saying last night, you know, with beech trees gradually sort of dying back in the south of England, and as they sort of migrate north with the isobars, you know, whether any of them have already gone from Oliver's Castle. But as you know, you said, from, you know, 25, 30 years ago, or 35, I can't do the maths either. Actually, it's about, if it's mid-1980s, that's about 35 years ago, isn't it?
So 37 years, isn't it, from 1984 to...
Then if it was the same number of trees, that suggests that maybe they've not suffered at that point, or even now, from the migration of beech trees north. Although, obviously, climate change doesn't happen overnight, as we all know. But, it's one of those places where it does get quite busy up there, doesn't it? There's a lot of people, particularly walking their dogs, so they can walk around there. But I prefer to sort of look at that one from afar, really.
Yeah, same here. You can get... I mean, I've got a... I think my photo on the blog post is of Roundway, Oliver's Castle, taken from the woodland on the other side. So it's the plantation. You kind of walk through the plantation, and eventually there's a kind of green open space that you find. And from there you get a very good vantage point of the shape of the hillside and the fort. It's very flat on the top and then drops away quite sharply and steeply down.
Hence the demise of Oliver Cromwell's horses and men.
Yeah,
in 1643.
Yeah, he misjudged and went flying off the edge. And to their doom.
But I think, I don't know. Oh, well, one more we should talk about before we finish is Steve Dewey's favourite, the Charlton clumps.
Yes, yeah, that was an interesting one, because when you asked me about which clumps to include, I thought of Charlton clumps because I've seen them so often, but I couldn't find any photographs that I'd taken myself, but I had seen some of Steve's. This is one of his sort of favourite places to go with his camera all year round.
Yeah, I think he photographs a lot of if anybody's on Flickr, Steve's got a great Flickr account, and he photographs a lot of the wildlife up that way as well. So sort of birds and what have you.
Like the mysterious herd of red deer.
Yes.
Which I think is still out there. I don't know. No one knows where on earth it came from.
Well, I saw somebody put a post on, some social media saying, where have they gone? I don't know if they disappeared. I don't know how you lose a herd of red deer, but they're so damn big. But, I assume they're still up there somewhere.
Yeah, maybe the owners found them. I don't know. But it was one of those things that this herd of red deer appeared and no one knew where it had come from and whether it had escaped from somewhere.
But Steve, quite deliberately, when he wrote his piece about Charlton clumps, it's clumps plural, because it's not just the one stand of trees. In fact, he said, you know, that the Ordnance Survey map of 1901 shows 9 clumps.
Yes.
But I think in his photographs, and his photographs are fantastic, of Charlton, there were just four trees that remain.
I think it's a strange thing, because on the map, I think on the 1 to 50,000, it says Charlton clump next to a green clump, basically, on the map. But when you go into the 1 to 25,000, you've got several different Charlton clumps all over the place.
Yeah.
You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, five that I can see just off the top of my head. So, yeah, there's several up there that are worthy of having a look.
Actually, I've misread Steve's comments. I think he said there are four clumps left.
Right.
So the photograph that he, or two photographs that he posted, I haven't got it in front of me. I can't remember how many. Actually, I can have a look, I think. I can't remember how many.
It says there's four.
There's four trees, is there?
Let me have a look. Yeah, there's four trees.
Right. Yeah, because he said two of the clumps have the sky behind, while two others are close to the ridgeway and could be photographed alone. But if anybody is wondering where North Charlton is, it's on the, I think it's the A342. So if you go to Upavon and then across to Rushall, well, you can't at the moment because the road's closed for roadworks. But between there and the road goes ultimately to Devizes with a branch off to Urchfont after Churton. So it's right. There's a little tea rooms there called the, used to be called the Charlton Cat, and I think it's called the Charlton Cat, but so hence the name, and the clumps are up on the on the plains, on Salisbury Plain, by the Charlton Cat.
Yeah, there's a sort of byway up there, it's called the Charlton Drove.
Yeah.
There's quite a few byways that take you up onto the escarpment from that road, the A342.
Yeah. Well, I think that'll do us for today, won't it? I think we're clumped out.
I think so. But I think the key thing is that, you know, everyone's got their own favourite. If we missed any of yours out that were, if you're listening along, we missed any of yours out, obviously we apologise, but we could only do the highlights. But one thing that stands out for me, and I was thinking of this as we were talking just about Oliver's Castle, is a lot of these stand out in a landscape for miles and miles and miles.
I mean,
Oliver's Castle, I can see it from here. You know, and it's
really?
A good 9 or 10 miles away. I have to go sort of for a bit of a walk out into the fields, but I go up to there's a hill nearby here called Hag Hill, and I go up there and I can see all the way across to Oliver's Castle and all the way across the Pusey Downs to Milk Hill, and I'm 15-20 miles away from there. Yeah.
Right.
Great.
We can just do the usual wrap up.
Wrap up.
Do you want to talk about the next Wiltshire Museum walk?
Yes, the next Wiltshire Museum walk is, and I'm trying to think of the date, but I think it's not this weekend, but the weekend after. It's
24th.
Going to be around 24th, yeah. It's Box Hill. So that is going to take us from the bottom of Box by the Bybrook, which we talked about before on when we talked about...
Castle Combe.
Castle Combe, yeah. Because the Bybrook kind of starts from up there, but it comes all the way down to Box. Walking past Peter Gabriel's Real World Studios. And then up into the hills, up over the hills. It's quite steep and pleasant, but you get up walking over the top of the Box Tunnel, which was part of Brunel's design for the railway line, before descending back through forests and woods down into the village. It's not a long walk. It's about three and a half miles. It's just very pleasant, and as usual, lots of interesting history and stuff to talk about as we go.
Actually, I'm wondering about the date now. Have I got that right? The 24th? Was it not before then?
I think it is 24th.
It with something else.
But as you're talking, I will quickly go and check. Bear with me.
Well, whilst you're doing that, I will just remind people about the offer from Lower. LOWA or Lova walking boots. I think the 20% discount offer is still live. So go onto the Lower website and put in the offer code HW20 for Hidden Wiltshire 20 for 20% off their boots. Thank you to Steve Dixon for the music. Another new one today. It's called Sitar Slink, as in the Indian banjo, whatever it is. So I'm not sure what that's all about, but thanks, Steve, for that. Have you found the next walk yet?
Yeah, and as usual, we're giving out duff information.
Because we're a habit of a lifetime.
We're trying to give the impression that we're professionals at this, and then we, to the last minute, we let ourselves down. There is a walk on the 24th, but that's Bratton and Luckin Springs.
Ah, yeah, that was it.
Box Hill is on the 11th.
11th, yeah, yeah.
So that is, I think that is a week on Sunday.
Yes.
Week on Sunday at 2:30 p.m.
So that'll be between now and the next podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. And go to the website for show notes and links, and I'll put a link into that to that walk.
And also, let's just give a bit of a teaser trailer for the next podcast, which will be an interesting one.
Oh, yes.
Because we've already recorded that one, and we recorded it some time ago. But
yeah, we've got a special guest, which we won't... you'll have to listen to it to find out who it is.
Yeah, we've got a special guest on. So for the first time, we'll have three of us on the podcast in 2 weeks' time.